Yes, I remember. We arrived in 1943. 43 was a crucial year for the Jewish people, because to Israel arrived the first knowledge of what is going on in Europe.
He fled Mussolini in the middle of World War II and landed in a barren desert. But Yoel de Malach and a few other Negev pioneers had a vision.
In those days, we thought that after the war, many survivors will arrive. And it was a must to find a place for them. We were very young and green and enthusiastic, and we thought that in a few years, all the desert will be green.
They didn't turn everything green, but 54 years later, Mr. de Malach and his wife live in a lush, man-made oasis in Kibbutz Revivim. Walking through the kibbutz at night, it feels like you're in a European village. Quiet paths, lush lawns, domed streetlights, a way of life imported, not including the towering palms. The amount of water at their disposal is high by anyone's standards, nearly 700 liters per day per person, or about 180 gallons just for household use. The kibbutz's fields consume seven times that amount, nearly half of it fresh water.
We have to use our water for decoration and for gardening and for to have. We want them to live in parks. If this is not a park, people will not continue to live here, because it's not easy to live in the desert.
Greening the Negev is an important symbol of the Zionist quest to claim the land. David Ben-Gurion, the founder of modern Israel, said the Negev will be the test to the Jewish people and the Jewish state. This effort will determine the fate of the state and the place of our people in the history of mankind. Israeli agriculture, both in the Negev and elsewhere in Israel, became a symbol of a new sovereign nation. But modern Israel is increasingly urban. And now, many Israelis say, Zionist dream or not, agriculture can't continue using 80% of the country's fresh water supply, especially when it represents only 3% of its economy.
I think that the time is going to come, and Israel is going to understand, that we cannot afford to grow cotton or any other such sort of garbage. These are water-eating crops.
Devorah Ben-Shaul, born in Waxahachie, Texas, has lived in Israel since 1959. She's an environmentalist and a writer living in the Galilee.
Yeah, sure, we're attached to them because these are dollar crops. But in the long run, they're not productive for us. We can't afford to grow oranges when oranges are so cheap from Spain or other Middle Eastern areas. We have to concentrate on using water for the things that it's worth using water for. There is this whole thing about making the desert bloom. Deserts are not supposed to be green. Sorry. Deserts are deserts. I know it's heretical to say it, but there is nowhere in the world where you have a dictum that says you've got to turn arid deserts into green pastures.
It may be blasphemy, but it's the truth. I lived on a kibbutz in the desert for a while, picking cucumbers out of the sand. You think to yourself, this is amazing. How did they do it? But when you look behind the whole picture and you see it's no magic, you have to question of whether or not this is what we should be doing.
Gershon Baskin is co-director of the Israel-Palestine Center for Research and Information.
I have a little garden to myself, and right here in our office, we have a little organic garden where we're growing cauliflower and parsley and some other things. I'm sentimental about the land, but I'm realistic about what Israel is, what place Israel should have in the world economy. I want us to build supercomputers and communication technology and lead the world in medical technology and not be known for our sweet oranges.
Mr. Baskin represents a younger generation of Israelis who are no longer so captured by the Zionist vision of greening the desert.
There's no mysticism to make the desert bloom. All you need is water and chemicals, and anyone can do it.
Israelis have justified using all that fresh water because they've been isolated politically and economically from the Arab world. For food security, they've wanted to grow all their own produce. But the days of agricultural self-sufficiency are gone, Mr. Baskin says, and the priority now should be in supplying water to a growing population, Israeli and Palestinian. In another generation, perhaps 15 million people will inhabit this land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean, nearly twice the population today. And even the generation that grew up with the Zionist dream is beginning to see the implications of that growth. Meir Ben Meir is Israel's water commissioner.
We in Israel already know that at somewhere between the first and the second decade of the coming century, fresh water will not be enough in order to be used on agriculture. Meaning that fresh water will be consumed for one purpose only, for domestic purposes. Agriculture will have to be dependent almost thoroughly on treated sewage.
Sewage like this, which starts out raw, coming by pipe from the biggest town in the Negev.
The sewage from the city of Be'er Sheva is pumped to this sewage treatment plant. Here we have the distribution pit. The sewage, the raw sewage is entering here, and then it is distributed in the two settling ponds. We have another.
Gidon Aron wrote his doctoral dissertation on the bird habitat of natural sewage plants like this one, where human wastewater is pumped through a series of earthen ponds. Through natural filtration and photosynthesis, it's converted to water for the fields. Israel already uses a lot of wastewater on its crops. A treated wastewater pipeline comes into the Negev from Tel Aviv, and Professor Aron says this kind of Israeli ingenuity can save agriculture.
And here we come with another solution by which we can solve the problem of efficient reuse of the effluent. The problem, to my opinion, will be mentally, to convince all of them that is the solution, and we have to go in this direction.
Israelis have sharply increased their agricultural production over the years through these wastewater pipelines and through drip irrigation. Now Dr. Aron and his colleagues have developed subsurface drip irrigation. It isn't healthy to use treated wastewater on crops like tomatoes or cucumbers, but now farmers with enough money can lay in the drip hoses and apply the recycled water directly to the roots. But farms are still heavily dependent on sweet water in Israel. They still suck up 4/5 of the country's fresh water supply. That's because water is still cheap, subsidized by the government, and so farmers still produce cotton, citrus, and other water-guzzling crops for export. Some critics say Israel's biggest export is water. All this indicates that despite the changes forecast for the farm, the agricultural lobby in Israel remains strong.
They kicked me out from the position of the water commissioner. The small-time politicians did it.
Former water commissioner Dan Zaslavsky says he ran head-on into the agricultural lobby when he tried to introduce conservation measures back in 1991.
In 1 year, despite the fact that the population increased tremendously, that this was the first big wave of Russian immigration, there was a considerable reduction in water use. We showed in several towns that we could reduce the water use by 20%. There was a national feeling, let's save it, let's not waste it. And it worked.
But Zaslavsky says an emerging ethic of conservation was a threat to the farm lobby. Signs of shortage, he says, would have meant that agriculture might have had to cut back.
There will be no lack of drinking water or industrial water, but agriculture is very questionable. Maybe I was a good technician, but politically I was not very smart, and I was eventually kicked out. As soon as I kicked out, the main line was, there's no lack of water, you can use as much as you need. Relax, there's no problem.
This short-term political victory, Zaslavsky charges, is already doing damage, most of all to Israel's underground water reserves.
We have been pumping about 150 million cubic meters, more than the average annual recharge. This means that there's no way but to start desalinating right away, or doing something. The alternative is terrible. Unless the policy with water changes, the farming is doomed.
The lack of a conservation ethic can be seen now all over Israel. Greenery lines the boulevards in many Israeli towns. Gardens abound, evoking not only the Zionist dream, but European roots. My hotel in Haifa featured two high-powered showerheads. And across the country, it's hard to detect an urgency to conserve.
I say that there is enough water in Tel Aviv. Everywhere, we have enough water for agriculture and to drink, to wash.
Salt floats on the wind at the boardwalk in Tel Aviv. It's a warm night on the Mediterranean. Old men play dominoes, hustlers deal a game of three-card Monte, families push babies in strollers.
They have too much water for the car and for the house and for the garden. They use too much water, they don't save.
No, they don't try to save. Everybody don't care about it. They know, but they don't care.
We are not limited with water, but if you use a lot of water, you pay a lot of money.
In Jordan, water conservation is the top priority of the U.S. aid program because water supplies there are so tight. In Israel, there are no such programs. The U.S. simply writes a check to Israel each year. Feeling little pressure on this issue, the Israelis have pursued a hard line in regional water negotiations. They're holding firm against Palestinian claims for water lying beneath the West Bank. They've been forced into only modest concessions with Jordan. And Minister of Infrastructure Ariel Sharon recently announced Israel's intention to build a dam on the Golan Heights, captured from Syria in 1967. Israel's strategy appears to be to hold on to what it has, use wastewater on the farms, shift fresh water to the cities, and augment supplies through new dams and eventually desalinization. Serious conservation is not on the agenda. Under this strategy, household use would remain the same, now about three times more per capita than the Palestinians and Jordanians, and agriculture, says former Israeli water negotiator Uri Shamir, would remain an important part of the Zionist dream.
Agriculture is not strictly an economic activity. It's a way of life. It's a way of populating the land, of settling it. And furthermore, society has essentially a pact with the agricultural community, which was the first to settle the land. And it is not possible nor desirable for us to say, well, thank you very much, you have done your job, you can now move on.
Yet there are changes coming to the kibbutz, the heart of Zionist agriculture.
This lot is about as old as I am.
Seymour Dinson, farm manager for Kibbutz Revivim, opens a gate and walks to the pipeline that brings fresh water all the way to this place, a few miles from the Egyptian border.
You could have snow falling in the Golan Heights on the Syrian border. It melts, flows into the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, and eventually is pumped here to Revivim, which is in the middle of the desert, the middle of the Negev desert, 270 miles away.
The fresh water that arrives in Kibbutz Revivim is still used to water crops. Seymour knows that may change. Already the kibbutz is using brackish groundwater for its strawberries and tomatoes.
And water, like everything else, is very, very political. There's less and less public support for farmers. Things, water is becoming more and more expensive, and there are crops that just aren't worth growing anymore.
Farming will become more focused here, emphasizing research to grow crops like melons, strawberries, and grapes in salty water. But agriculture's economic importance in the kibbutz is in decline. The biggest moneymaker in Revivim is a factory that produces molded plastic parts for GM cars. That doesn't mean the dream of greening the desert is dead. Kibbutz Revivim will continue to grow crops, and soon they'll have new neighbors. Today, Israeli planners, confident in their water future, are laying ambitious new plans in the desert. The Negev will be the source of Israel's next big wave of growth. Small factories, fish ponds, citrus groves, and whole new communities will sprout up, relying heavily on recycled water. All this will help realize David Ben-Gurion's vision to bloom the desolate land and convert the spacious Negev into a source of force and power, a blessing to the state of Israel.